On the line from Northern California, we have Anthony Sanchez, and he's been making quite a buzz in the UFO community for some time. We've known Anthony since he first showed up in New Mexico and did a live show with us in front of an audience. And he has a book called Highway, UFO Highway, and it's a great read, and now it's in a hardbound copy. And later on, we're going to take a few phone calls. But first of all, Anthony, I want to welcome you to the show.
Thank you for having me, Jerry.
It's always good to having you on. And have you recovered from your fast trip to New Mexico?
You know, I'm still recovering. So I've gotten a lot of help from a lot of friends, a lot of new friends. And I'm really thankful and grateful for all of their assistance. And yeah. I'm still undergoing a little bit of pain, and you can obviously tell my voice is still affected, but I'm still, you know, waiting for the results for some blood tests to come back.
Why don't you tell our audience a little bit of like what we're talking about here? We'd probably need to start at the beginning. A lot of people know about what has been happening with you, Anthony, but why don't you just tell the story? You ended up at the Taos Conference there at the 2011 Symposium and Film Festival, and you made some real news. And the way you made the real news is you stopped by Dulce on the way to Taos.
That's right.
Why don't you just kind of tell everybody what happened there? I mean, you arrived at Taos. I mean, actually arrived in Dulce first, I guess. What, early in the morning or late at night or what?
Yeah, 2:30 in the morning on Monday, the 24th, we arrived at Dulce, and we checked into the Mass Western, the Jicarilla, the Mass Western Inn there, and it's the I want to say the Wild Horse Casino. Anyhow, that 8:00 that morning, I met with my contact there, and I don't want to give her name out because she wants to remain anonymous. It's understandable. This is the same person who facilitated the arrival for Jesse Ventura and his crew from the True TV network. She had informed me that we were going to be meeting with the public relations officer, Leon K. Raval, from the Jicarilla Apache Nation, and that we were also going to be meeting with the tribal council president. I don't know why we were going to meet with them, but I guess it was to gain permission, because apparently Governor Ventura was denied access to film on the reservation. When his crew showed up on Friday the 21st, they told them that they were not going to be allowed to film on the reservation directly, but that they could off the reservation, you know, just outside of town. And they were actually given a contact, a local Bigfoot expert, Hoyt Velarde, who I guess was taking them around, giving them information and whatnot, and hopefully that worked out well, because I really want to see Governor Ventura's show succeed. I'm a big fan of his, and I just hope that Dulce episode really, you know, resonates with the people. So
yeah, I think Anthony, as far as Jesse Ventura and his TV show, I talked to one of the producers again. And, you know, they want to do a show about Dulce. They just haven't gotten the right film yet. Right video. And it's a work in progress. They still have a couple of months before this thing debuts. So, you know, I think it's a feather in your hat, so to speak, that you were able to get access and other people weren't. And how do you attribute that? I mean, why did they give you the access?
Well, here's the reason why. I am close personal friends with several families of the Jicarilla Nation. And in all the time that I have known these people, I have never spoken negatively about the nation. I have demonstrated to them that I have a complete knowledge of their sacred texts. I have read all 52 of the Jicarilla sacred texts, the Jicarilla Apache sacred texts. And I did so to gain a knowledge into the culture, into the environment, and to just truly understand who it is I'm dealing with, you know, there in Dulce. And I really have a profound respect for these people. I love these people. They're great friends of mine. And we actually stayed with them. So it's a testament as to how much, you know, we have created, how much of a bond we've created with one another. This person who took us to the tribal council literally sat us down in front of the public relations officer and the tribal council president, and I was so honored to be there. And I gave them a copy of my book, and you know, they had already read the website and the book apparently, and they knew.
Yeah, because it had been an e-book for a while, but you've revised it somewhat.
That's right. There are a lot of revisions in the print version. The e-book was an unedited version. It was never meant to be released, but it was. And it is what it is. But I gave Public Relations Officer Raval a copy of my book, and I was really pleased that he was happy that we were there, because he knew we were going to do nothing but good, you know, things. You know, we respect the Jicarilla people. Later that morning, at about 10:30, we found ourselves on top of the mesa, and we were looking for two areas in particular. We wanted to
I don't mean to interrupt you, but just the sake of people understanding, tell me your impression and how you got up to the mesa. Is there a road going up there, or what? I mean, how did that feel, and how did it look?
You know, there are actually several roads to get up to the mesa. You can come in from the southern Colorado side, which was technically be north of the mesa, but it's the southern Colorado border. But we came in through the south of the mesa. We went up J2, and then there's a road just adjacent to J2 called 139, and there's a bridge. But again, you cannot go onto Jicarilla land and expect to just drive around. They will arrest you.
Now who will arrest you?
The tribal law enforcement, the police officers there.
Okay.
You're not allowed to just willy-nilly, you know, meander about on the... This is sovereign Indian land. You have to remember, it is a sovereign nation. They have their own set of rules, their own set of laws, and you must abide by them.
Well, what do you think? They just don't want trespassers, or what?
You know what? There are a lot of trespassers there because of the notoriety of the base. As a matter of fact, I know another ufologist, a person who's essentially not necessarily a fan of mine, who snuck onto the reservation, and you know, he had admitted this to me, and I was not happy knowing this, you know, and I hope he doesn't do that again, because it's not to the advantage of the Jicarilla people, and it hurts the image of the Jicarilla nation, which is such a beautiful culture. They don't need people sneaking about. If you want to go to Dulce, ask for permission. Get the proper, you know, permission that is required. And we did. And we were given a 7-year veteran law enforcement officer and a 13-year veteran law enforcement officer, two of them, who were going to serve as our guides. And we went with the one person who is now a professional hunting guide up there. And he works with a lot of famous people. I was shocked to learn that he had actually taken Sacramento Mayor Kevin Johnson up there hunting. It's just so gorgeous up there. So it doesn't surprise me that the people with the big bucks want to go to where all the the elk and the deer are. And anyhow, he took us up this road, and boy, I tell you, it was a treacherous road indeed. It was very treacherous. I mean, we were hugging cliffs, and we were, you know, driving on top of huge holes, and this guy had a wonderful 4x4 vehicle, and it took us about an hour and 40 minutes to get up to the plateau. And two things we spotted on the way up. One area that I call Shadow Ridge, which is just possible location for an entrance, and it really, really closely mirrors what the colonel said in the interview that I conducted with him. So I had a lot of interest in that area, and we did a lot of investigating, and we found some unnatural occurrences there. There was this wall of columnar basalt that had this massive pile of rubble on it. But we figured, okay, so there must be, you know, this natural collapse that occurred somewhere. But there wasn't one. There were normal striations in the columnar basalt that were consistent. And which tells us that this massive pile of rubble came from somewhere else. One of the people that we met with, who's now a chief of police in the a neighboring reservation, but who is Jicarilla himself, and I don't want to give his name out because Janet Taylor knows who I'm talking about, but this person doesn't want to be identified. Nobody wants to be identified. He claims that he has actually reported to Kirtland Air Force Base and the Jicarilla Police Department during his 10 years of service as an officer that he saw holographic entrances, and he saw craft coming out of and going into these entrances. And, you know, this was, again, one of the new things that we discovered that was just lending more and more credibility to the information that we received from, that I received from the colonel. The other area
you mentioned the colonel twice here. Tell people, not everyone knows about Colonel X.
Tell
people a little bit. He was your major source for the Dulcie information originally on the original manuscript.
Yes.
Is that right?
That's right. So in 2010, January, I interviewed this colonel, and he is the basis for the book UFO Highway. All the information that I have from Dulcie comes from him. And so all of the facts, all of the data that I have come from the colonel, and that's who I'm trying to, that's the information that I'm trying to validate. That's why I went to Dulcie.
Yeah, I just got a Facebook message here, and a couple of them. One of them wants to know if we're going to take phone calls, and we will. We'll open up the phone lines a little later in the show. And then the other Facebook message was from someone who said, did you actually name the Colonel X, identify him? They thought you did sometime or another. I've never known that, but...
No, I never named him. I've never given his name.
No, I think that was misinformation.
You.
All I know about him is he was in academia and probably still is.
He still is. And he is a retired United States Air Force colonel. He was originally stationed in North Highlands. And then via Edwards Air Force Base, he somehow ended up in Dulcie because of this event that occurred in 79. I have never given out his name. I've never identified what university he worked at or works at. If somebody is out there saying that I have identified him, that's misleading. That's not true.
Well, I just got a question about it on Facebook, so.
No, it's okay. Yeah, no, I understand. There's a lot of people out there that think that I've identified him, but no. But I can tell you this. I finally learned the identities of the two individuals who admitted to being helicoptered in to the entrance of the facility on the southwest of the southwest of Mesa in 79. One was a New Mexico State police officer, and no, it was not Gabe Valdez, and the other was a Jicarilla high-ranking Jicarilla law enforcement officer. And I met with an individual who gave me both of their names. These two individuals spoke at length with this person that I told you about that I met with me and Janet Taylor.
Are they both deceased now?
Yeah, they are. Yes, they are.
Okay, go ahead, Ed. So tell me what you were told.
Well, one of them, their son is still around, and he's still there in Dulcie, the son of the officer. Norio knows this person very well. But again,
Norio Hayakawa, who's listening, by the way, and we got a note running. And you worked very closely with Norio. Norio's had a Dulcie conference at one time. Now, go ahead.
Yeah, Norio's probably the foremost expert in the world on Dulcie. I mean, there's just no ifs, ands, or buts around it. Norio knows more about Dulcie. He knows more about all of the principles involved with the history and the mythology surrounding Dulcie. So he's somebody who I regularly attribute as my own, you know, resident expert. I often refer to Norio in these matters. But, yeah, so Norio knows the name of the son who's still around. The other person, I believe, I'm pretty certain both people are now deceased. But, again, that information is not going to be released at this time. We just can't because it's just not disclosable at this point because there's a lot of classified information that can affect the lives of the people there on the Jicarilla Apache Reservation, and we don't want to hurt these people.
Okay, let's get back to the ambiance of your trip up there. Are those roads pretty rough to get up to?
They are extremely rough. As a matter of fact, several of the times when I was working with my camera and I actually let go of the handles inside of the truck, actually hit my head a couple of times on the inside of the truck. And Rick Prestel from Sacramento MUFON, who was manning the high-definition video camera himself, actually, you know, succumbed to a couple of head bumps when we hit some holes or, you know, we're going up a steep area. So, yeah, it's pretty treacherous up there. I don't recommend anyone try to drive up there. I stupidly thought I was going to be able to drive my car up there. They said, no, there's no way in hell you're going to be able to take your car up there. We're going to have to go in a 4x4 vehicle.
Yeah, I was looking at some of the video and pictures that you took while you were up there. That looks like, even at the top of the mesa, it looks pretty rough.
It is extremely rough. I tell you what, it's pretty beautiful, though. Once you get to the plateau of the mesa, it's when you look towards Colorado and you look over the Jicarilla Nation, you know, southward all over Dulce, any direction you look in, you're looking at beauty, this immense beauty. It's gorgeous up there. So we found the 1996 crash site.
But before you go any further, tell me, what this 1996 crash site is? What happened?
In 1996, several families there in Dulce witnessed a 150-foot wide diameter copper colored disc. It was glowing and it was copper in color, smash into the top of the mesa, and a lot of them actually went up there immediately after the crash. And what happened was that as soon as they made it up there, helicopters were landing at the perimeter of the craft, where the crash site was, and they essentially said they cordoned off the area. They forced everyone back into town, and these black SUVs and these other, you know, military-type trucks reportedly came in and removed all of the evidence from the crash, all of the crash evidence. So,
do we know exactly what crashed?
No. Well, the people there that I interviewed said it was a massive disc and it was copper. It was a copper-colored disc. That's all we have, and that it was essentially some.
It could be one of two things: either an experimental craft, a secret craft, or it could be extraterrestrial.
Exactly. You know, I did a map. I made a map of Dulce where I placed Dulce in the center, specifically the Archuleta Mesa. And I outlined all of the surrounding, you know, U.S. Naval Air Field installations, the Air Force bases, even a couple of Marine and Army installations that I found. And nothing comes closer than essentially, I think Kirtland, you know, is the closest. Kirtland Air Force Base comes to, I think it's between 200 and 350 miles to Dulce, but everything else is further away. But Dulce is smack dab in the middle of everything. And to me, I think what's happening in Dulce, now this is just this is my new opinion on what is happening there.
I can't wait to hear it. Go ahead and tell me.
Yeah, I think Dulce just happens to be, you know, smack dab in the middle of this highway that's consists of experimental craft from the military. Whether or not it's using alien technology, I don't know. But I think all experimental craft is coming out of, like, Los Alamos, Kirtland, all these places. It's just Dulce just happens to be right in the middle of it. So I think, you know, that's why this summer alone there have been multiple sightings of, again, this massive copper-colored disc, these nine silver discs flying in formation in broad daylight over Dulce Rock headed towards Farmington. There have just been a numerous amount of disc, you know, UFO sightings in Dulce this year alone. So, again, I think it lends credence to the fact that Dulce is just as highway for, you know, for experimental craft activity.
Do you still stand by your feelings about extraterrestrials being down there as well in 25,000 year history? Do you still stand by that?
Absolutely. I have every reason to believe.
So you think it's a combination, and I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but basically that you have the black operations you just alluded to, plus this other thing going on.
Well, get this. We made a startling connection in Dulce this year when we were there just a couple of weeks ago. We had a sketch from one of the presenters there, which was from Paul Benowitz. This is a sketch of an alien craft that Paul Benowitz saw. We interviewed a current chief of police of a neighboring area who does not want to be identified, but again, Janet Saylor was there, this person's family was there, Rick Prestel was there, I was there. He drew a sketch. This person has never seen the Paul Benowitz sketch in his life. He swore to us. I would say within a 95% likeness, the sketches were almost identical. And here's what's critical about this information. This is the person who says he saw craft coming in and out of holographic entrances of the Mesa, from the Mesa, one beneath the radio tower and one in the southwest portion, which was the main area, where the 1979, incident occurred and where the two gentlemen were helicoptered in from law enforcement agencies. What was critical is that the craft sketches looked nearly identical. This person and another officer reported this incident to the Jicarilla Police Department and to Kirtland Air Force Base on what they saw. They saw a craft, a silver-colored craft. It's not a disc. It's more like a teardrop shape. And inside of the front area of the craft was a cockpit. Inside, it was illuminated with a fluorescent colored, like a purplish, lavenderish color. And there was a creature inside of it, a being. And it was what he described as a gray. Now, you got to remember, this is a person who is a Jicarilla. And they have beliefs that, that essentially tie into these mythologies. So to him, seeing something like this was not, the craft is what was startling to him. The actual being, the creature, was not what startled him. But because you have to understand that in that area, from the Jicarilla Apache Nation all the way over to Taos Pueblo, they have a history of seeing things in the wilderness, in the sky, underground. There are underground areas that they don't share with people, but people know that this is there, but it's not something that they're going to come outright and tell you.
Yeah, now tell me about this creature inside the craft. Was it alive?
Well, this is what happened. Yes, it absolutely was alive. It had circled around three times, and by the third time they realized they were going to be able to time when it was going to come right over them again. So they turned off their vehicle. They turned off all of their radios, and the one gentleman had the other officer prepare a spotlight. And he said, listen, as soon as that thing comes directly over us, he goes, I want you to, flood that thing with all the light that we have. And they had a countdown. They were timing it, and, 3, 2, 1, boom, they flooded this thing with light, and it hovered directly over them. He said the craft tilted downward, and whoever was in there stared directly at them. And then it shot off. And it wasn't until the second pass that they realized this thing was absolutely silent. It did not make a sound. And during the first pass, they thought a car was coming at them. Then they thought a train was coming at them. And it wasn't until they realized that there was this, lavender, purplish color illuminated, cockpit that this was not a train or a car. So it was a scary thing for them. But again, the thing that struck me the most was that what really impacted this gentleman was not the what he described as a gray, but the fact that it was a hovering craft.
And teardrop-shaped.
And it was nearly identical to a sketch that Paul Benowitz...
And it made no noise.
It made no noise.
And you have no reason to doubt that story.
Absolutely not.
I mean, you
Absolutely.
Looked at the person's eyes when they told it. It's not scientific, but you're pretty intuitive.
This
you believe it.
Drew, This person drew a total of 19 sketches for me of what he has seen over the last 20 years in the area of Dulce, 10 of those years which he was a police officer for Dulce. Now he's a chief of police somewhere else. But there's no reason to doubt this guy. And, you know, he was so sincere and so, you know, forthright with his in his conviction about what he saw. And let me tell you something. His two sons were at the table with us. And no father would lie in front of their sons. I have two sons, and I would never lie in front of my sons. Never lie, period. And this gentleman is a very, very respected law, member of law enforcement, and I have every reason to believe him. And like I said, Janet Saylor was at the table, Rick Pristel was at the table, as were his sons. And
We have some callers lined up, Anthony. Is it okay if we go ahead and open the phones?
Yes.
Okay, caller, you're on the air with Anthony Sanchez and Jerry Pippin. How are you? Is the caller there? Okay, the caller's about ready. Anthony, I want to get back to more of the ambience of getting up on that mesa in a moment, but first of all, let's take the caller. Hello, caller.
Yes, hey, Anthony.
Hi.
Hi, I really am interested in this, and it does explain a lot why average citizens don't see UFOs. You explain these holographic entrances, the military bases. If the military has it, why wouldn't the UFOs have the holographic invisibility? And I think that explains why we don't.
I think there's a lot of evidence that there's a shift shaping going on. What we see is not necessarily what we see.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Don't you agree, Anthony?
I absolutely agree with that. And remember, what's happening here is that these entrances, there are actually physical doors. But when the physical doors are open, that's when these holographic projections come into place. And what you see is a projection of light that essentially, you know, disguises the opening. And that's what this officer was telling me. And then we already have this technology.
This technology. I just read an article on one science magazine a while back with the Army is actually able to put up a hologram and make the entire background look different than it really is.
That's right. They actually have cloaking technology that they're already using. And if you go to essentially Google and you go into the news section and you type in cloaking device, you'll see that there's scientists that have already created these invisibility cloaks with the ability to essentially bend light. Essentially, they're bending light. It's based on the same principle when you see a mirage on a road. What they're doing is they're working with these sheets of carbon nanotubes to bend light around them that essentially render anything behind them invisible. It actually exists. Just go to Google and type in "scientists create invisibility cloak." The technology already exists.
Okay, thank you, caller. Anthony, when you were up there on top of this mesa, everything you saw, you figure was real? I mean, that's a silly question, but maybe it's not. You know what I mean?
I'll tell you what. Yeah, no, absolutely. One of the things that we found up there, and I have photographs of this, and I'll be releasing them on the website, was this shack. Now, I asked my guide, I said, "Is that some sort of a hunting shack?" And he said, "You know what? We don't know who put that shack there. No one from the Jicarilla ever used that shack. It's not from the Utes. It's not from the VLM.
Is it like a guard shack?"
It's kind of, it looks like it could be a hunting shack, you know, like a small hunting lodge. But he told me, and this is a guy that takes people out there, he goes, "We don't know who put it there. It just showed up there." And guess what? It's directly adjacent to the military containers that we found.
Now, we haven't told the audience about this. Let's tell them what you found up there. It's pretty incredible. And you're the first researcher, I think, that's found actual evidence of U.S. government involvement.
That's right. Now, think about it. any U.S. government property, not on BLM land, but on sovereign Jicarilla land, that's there illegally. And I confirmed this with law enforcement from the Jicarilla Apache Nation. So we found two massive steel military-grade containers. And I said, what the heck are those? What are these things doing up here? And sure enough, I mean, completely out of place. They are shipping containers for F-5 jet engines. What are they doing up there? We don't know. Underneath one of them, there were slats of wood, and we can feel air coming up from beneath it. Was there a shaft? We couldn't tell because these things are so damn heavy we could not lift them.
So you're thinking it might be over some sort of opening?
We believe so. One of them, at least. One of them. There's one that was under a tree. That one, we don't know what it's doing there. And then there's another one adjacent to it about, I would say, 30 to 40 feet away. That one had wooden slats underneath it, and we felt air coming under from underneath it. Now, were these put there because they were so heavy that the military knew that it would prevent anybody from being able to lift them and expose what's underneath them? I'm not sure. But it is...
I mean, they definitely didn't get them up here by road, I don't think. Maybe they did.
No, they're massively heavy. Listen to this, Jerry. This is irrefutable proof that the United States government is up there. We don't know what they're doing up there. We don't know why, you know, these shipping containers are up there. But they're military-grade steel shipping containers for F-5 jet engines. What are they doing in the middle of a cow pasture?
Well, I think you sent me an email that you could make out the serial numbers. Am I incorrect?
Yeah. Now, I sent you, Jerry Pittman, Mel Fabregas, and several other media people, the full-blown high-def images that show the numbers and everything. Now, on my site, I'm not releasing those numbers, and I ask that you guys don't either. And here's the reason why. We are still conducting an ongoing investigation into the federal serial numbers, the federal serial plating of these containers, because we're trying to understand why they're there, how they got there, and who put them up there. And we don't need scrutiny from outside investigators at the moment. We want to conduct this investigation using scientific methodology, and that's why I'm asking that you and all the other media personnel that I sent those to, the enlarged higher definition pictures, not to disclose the numbering to anyone at this time, because we're conducting an ongoing investigation.
But you're pretty convinced, and we don't want to blow your investigation, but you're pretty convinced that those are jet engines for military aircraft.
Yeah, we're pretty convinced. For the F-5 jet engine, based on the serial numbers that we found.
I wonder why they would be up there. I mean...
We don't know. We have absolutely no reason. We don't understand why they're there. But the curious thing is there's this shack that our Jicarilla guide, who's been, you know, going up there, his whole life. He's got to be about, almost 45 years old now. He's been going up there his whole life. He says that shack just appeared out of nowhere a couple of years ago. And it looks, here's the thing. He says it's only been up there a couple of years, but it looks like it's 40 years old. He says whenever somebody from the nation erects a hunting lodge, you know, it stays in pretty good shape for at least 10 years. This thing said just showed up, and it already looks like it was purposely disguised to not be attractive to people, to not want to use it. So we just didn't make our way up to it. We just couldn't get up to it. Our time was limited, and we just had to focus on the containers. We really needed to focus on the containers. But
okay, let's open up the phone lines here. Let's open up the phone lines and take some phone calls. 888-919-BELL. That's the number, 888-919-2355. If you have a question or a statement for Anthony Sanchez, we'd like to hear from you. Anthony, were you afraid at all while you were up there? I guess not. You had authorities from the Indian Nation there.
No, I was not afraid at all. We were with a former law enforcement of the Jicarilla Apache Nation, a law enforcement officer, a police officer. I had no reason to be afraid. You know, one of the things he told me was that he had a hunting party up there, and they were confronted by, now this is in the summer, he had a hunting party up there, and they were confronted by three men in military garb. He could not tell from what branch of the military they were from, but they told them that they were violating a restricted area and they needed to vacate the premises. And he turned around and told them, no, this is Jicarilla Apache land. We have every right to be here. I'm a Jicarilla Apache. And they said, not today, you're not. They said, you're violating a restricted area and you need to vacate the premises immediately. And their guns were pointed at them. So this is pretty serious. I mean, that's a violation of sovereign land. Who the hell does the military think they are, you know, invading sovereign land and telling these guys to vacate?
Okay, I think we have another caller. Let's go ahead and take that call. And, Anthony, I want to follow up on that a little bit after the phone caller here. Caller,
okay,
you're on the air.
Hey, Anthony, I am very interested in this. Why don't you think, UFO hunters or anybody, we don't really know about those. We only don't know about, all we really know about is Area 51 and,
UFO hunters did a show about Dulce last year or year before, and we have Jesse Ventura and his crews trying to do a show on it. They'll probably do it on their conspiracy files coming up in January.
Show. I mean,
we've been doing shows on Dulce forever. Anthony, maybe you want to chip in here. It's secret, but it's not secret. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Area 51 is what people really know about. They don't really know about Dulce.
Yeah, the thing about Dulce, which is so intriguing, is that there's such a high level of mythology surrounding the place. You know, you have the Jicarilla, which have all these myths and these legends about creatures that they've seen, from Bigfoot to small little devils that they call them, you know, which we attribute to being greys. Then you have this story that emerged, from this whole reptilian camp that talks about, you know, Nightmare Hall and all these other things and this whole reptilian aspect to it. And again, you know, our source says that none of that is true, other than, you know, the Phil Schneider involvement, which is true. Phil Schneider did actually work at the facility. So you have this whole mysterious aspect to the underlying story of Dulce. So I think that's what makes it so intriguing. But again, here's what's even more interesting about Dulce than I think even more so than, you know, Area 51. The fact that you have people like Norio Hayakawa, who went up to Dulce with a camera crew and were arrested, were detained. They were detained by law enforcement. These interesting scenarios play out. Then you have these other two investigators who were on UFO hunters that went up there, and they were also detained. And then when one of them, I think his name was Bob, asked, you know, this law enforcement officer, you know, was he there during 1979? The law enforcement officer looked him straight in the eye and said, I'm not allowed to talk about it. So, you know, there's just this mystery to Dulce. And now I have the honor of meeting this individual who says he actually worked at Dulce. And he gave me this, you know, litany of information. And there's just so much information there to try and, you know, research. And it's part of what, you know, compels me to want to find the truth. And I think that we have finally stumbled on a piece of evidence that is irrefutable proof that the government is there. We found military-grade steel shipping containers for F-5 jet engines on the plateau of the Mesa, less than 1,600 feet away from the radio towers. Something's there, not to mention the fact that we have probably over 20 witnesses that we interviewed in Dulce, but we didn't interview them in Dulce. We were not allowed to interview anybody in the township. We had to interview them over in Taos or in Chama or in Lumberton outside of Dulce. That was one of the restrictions. I do not know why that was placed upon us, but we honored it and we respected their wish. We did not interview anybody inside the township of Dulce. All interviews were conducted outside of Dulce.
Our telephone number for Anthony Sanchez and Jerry Pippin is 888-919-BELL, or you can just dial 2355. It's 888-919-2355. We have Facebook and Twitter going as well. And also, if you want to email me personally, at jerry@jerrypippin.com. And I just got an email personally from Janet Saylor, who's listening. And Janet tells me that you were pretty ill in Taos and actually checked into the hospital. Are we letting something happen we shouldn't talk about?
No, it's okay. Yeah.
Yeah, what was the problem?
Well, everything was fine. After we went to Dulce and conducted our investigation, that evening, I would say it was the evening of the 25th. Was it the 25th or the 24th? No, it was the evening of the 24th. It was the day after the primary investigation. I came down with an intense headache, and it was just unbearable. I could not handle the pain. I had to check into a room over at the Best Western Inn because we were going to stay. Rick ended up staying with the family that was hosting us in Dulce. These are Jicarilla people. I, unfortunately, was in so much pain, I had to check into a room. I just could not, I didn't want to be, a hindrance on these people. I didn't want to impose on them with all of my, all that was going on that evening. The next morning, the pain was worse. We conducted another investigation, then we left for Taos. By the time we arrived at Taos, I could barely leave my room. I think the only time I left my room was to try and have a drink and smoke a cigar, and it wasn't happening. And then I ended up going on the air with you. And the next morning, and I collapsed after that interview with you. I just physically collapsed from the pain. I was in a sweat. I just was sweating profusely. And my hearing was coming and going. My vision was coming and going. The next morning, I woke up, and I had a full-blown paralysis on the left side of my face from my neck all the way up to the top of my head. I just could not move anything. I was paranoid that I had a stroke, so I immediately went to the emergency room at the hospital there in Taos, and they ran tests, and they told me I didn't have a stroke. And then they said the strangest thing. They said, one of the doctors said, well, it could be something called Bell's palsy. Now, this was the physician's assistant who said that. But the doctor says, I don't think so. What he has is not consistent with Bell's palsy the way it came about. When I got back to California, I had a battery of blood tests that I underwent. They said that they had identified that I had been subjected to some type of a neurotoxin. They thought, okay, well, maybe I was subjected to like a pesticide to get rid of ants or wasps or something. But they said that if that had been the case, they would have been able to identify the chemical signature. And in this case, they haven't. So I'm still undergoing, right now I'm on Vicodin, and I am on a ton of different types of steroids, primarily prednisone. I'm going to be seeing a specialist soon. But I want to just give a shout out to all the healers who have come forth and have helped me. I have to tell you, several healers have come forward and have done some work on me and have made me feel tremendously better, and I am forever grateful for them and to them, and I thank them for that. It was really an unprecedented level of support that I got from the healing community, so thank you.
Anthony Sanchez is our guest, and he has a book called UFO Highway, and basically it first started out as an e-book, actually started out as a dream, Anthony, and you followed it through, and now it's published. It's a hardbound book. People can buy it from your website, I take it.
Mm-hmm. UFOHighway.com.
And I imagine it felt good to actually touch a book after all these months.
Oh, I tell you, it was finally a dream come true for me. It was what I had always wanted. I wanted to physically be able to hold a book that I can give to people. You know, let me tell you something. When we were in Dulce, we were so overextended. We were over budget, and we needed to sell books to get home. But you know what? I was giving books away for free to people. I'm not in this to be rich. I'm not in this to make a name for myself and sell books like a lot of other people are. I'm in this business to find the truth. And much to the dismay of my publicist, I ended up giving a lot of my books away. But that's just the way I am. Even today, I was corresponding with someone on Facebook, and he really wanted my book, and he explained to me that he had financial difficulties. And guess what? I sent him a book for free. That's just the way I am, and I'm not in this for money. If anybody thinks I'm in this for money, they are totally wrong. I'm in this to find the truth.
And, of course, you could use the money. All the book sale money goes to you and your company.
Yeah, what the book sales do is it allows us to be able to travel to places like Dulce, and it also allows us to buy equipment like high-definition cameras, a lot of scientific equipment from places like Radio Shack or ones that we make ourselves. It allows us the ability to afford a little bit of an expense towards a better quality-grade equipment.
We're talking with Anthony Sanchez, and we're talking about his book, UFO Highway, and we're going to open up the phone lines again, 888-919-BELL. That's 919-2355 if you have a question about Dulce or anything for Anthony. He's a pretty open guy. And Anthony, you finally entered the big leagues because you're up there with me and Kerry Cassidy and a few others that, you get a lot of detractors now.
Mm-hmm.
People taking pot shots at you.
Yeah,
so that
you
means
know,
you're
I mean,
doing, in my opinion, that means you're doing something right. I've always taken that as a compliment.
It is a compliment. And, they're going to come at me. They're going to, fabricate stories. They're going to take emails that I've sent to them, twist them, augment them, and create these lies. And it's okay. I know that there are people that, in my mind, I truly believe are funded by malevolent organizations to distract the public from hearing the message that I have to provide. And it's not commonplace. This is commonplace. There are other reputable investigators out there who have been slammed by so-called fellow UFO investigators for various reasons, predominantly because you're hurting their book sales, which is just ridiculous. But, I think it's just these people are being paid by organizations to hinder the work of others, and it's just not right. I'm in this business to get information out to people, and but, when I don't give them energy and I look past their nonsense, their shenanigans, I'm able to do things like go up to the Mesa and make a major discovery. How many people have ever done that before? No one. No one has ever found military-grade equipment or, up there before, property. It literally says U.S. government property. Who's done that before? No one. I was the first, and I did it. Why did I do it? Because in my heart, I believe my source, and I believe the people who have been talking to me for so long about Dulce. These people tell me, when we're off the reservation and we talk to people and we tell them about what we see, they think we're crazy. And then when I tell them, you're not crazy. You're just material witnesses to something that's actually happening.
Todd here.
Okay, we have a couple of callers we're going to go to in a minute. First of all, I got another email, this time from movie producer Robert Miles. And he says he's worried about you. He thinks people, are taking... he thinks, you're in dangerous territory. What do you think, Anthony? I've kidded you about that.
Mm-hmm.
But, he might be right.
He may be right.
Why would they want to do, they want to do harm to you?
I think because we're getting close to finding something that we're not supposed to be looking at there in Dulce. And it's putting a lot of pressure on us. And I think that we're seeing an escalation in the attacks. And, just last night, I had to send an email to, this other, UFO person who sent out a little announcement saying that he was going to tell the world about me and this and that. I have nothing to hide. I have absolutely nothing to hide. I spoke with several people in this business, and the minute I detracted from what they felt was the norm for a UFO investigator, the minute I wanted to seek out a medium and have them, you know, provide analysis on, you know, psychic analysis on artifacts that I had received from a friend there in Dulce from the Mesa, they went into a panic. They're like, how dare you bring in a medium to the world of UFO research? You're tarnishing ufology. It's like, first of all, you know, there's nothing mainstream about ufology. There's nothing mainstream about ufology, and I have every right to do whatever it is I please as an investigator to get to the bottom, you know, of things, to get to the truth in any manner that I please.
Our telephone number, 888-919-BELL, that's 888-919-2355. First caller, you're on the air. Hello.
Yes, Jerry. My prayers are with you. You do sound like something's happened that you got to expose to some kind of chemical agent. Maybe something like they did in Vietnam with the napalm. I hope it's not like that. But my question is, you know, why is Dulce not really, you know, how they got Area 51 guarded? You know, you can't get past a certain perimeter. They don't seem to have that guarded besides the reservation. Why do you think that is? Is it because they got the invisibility cloak?
Well, it's because my personal belief is that already there is a natural perimeter that you really cannot get past. And that's the law enforcement agency, which is one hell of a group of police officers. I met some of them. And these are highly trained professionals. You know, when you go back 25, 30 years ago, you know, a lot of people are going to tell you, even they will tell you, dude, we really weren't trained back then. Today, these officers undergo a hell of a lot of training, equivalent to or better to officers in surrounding non-reservation counties. These are highly trained professionals. And they have a really powerful grip on their little community, and they're very protective of the Jicarilla Nation, and I applaud them for that, because you have idiots who are going there trying to breach the perimeter and conduct their little illegal investigations, and one of them, who is part of this group of individuals who is attacking me now, if Robert Hastings and Frank Warren and all these other guys come out with the information they have, I am going to expose their little friend in their group who has illegally breached their area, and I have email evidence that he has done this. He emailed me the mat and how he did it, and I will go to the hilt with this one.
Dulce, actually, in the Archuleta Mesa is actually pretty well guarded naturally and also by the police department down there.
That's right.
And
that's right.
People and when people do get up there, they usually have encounters with people in uniforms.
Mm-hmm.
They're probably some sort of private guard service or army paramilitary unit.
Well,
it doesn't seem like it is like Area 51.
No, you got to put it into perspective. Remember this. Just this summer, several hunting parties were confronted by military personnel who pointed AR-15s at them and told them to get the hell out of there. That's good enough for me to turn around and leave.
Yeah, okay, let's move on to the second caller here. Are you there?
I believe I'm here.
I think we have another caller.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Yes, J.C. Johnson, how are you guys tonight?
Okay, how are you?
Good, hey, just been kind of worried about Anthony. I've been following all the latest developments, and I'm really concerned about you, brother.
Yeah, hey, JC's one of my Facebook buddies. How are you doing, JC? It's nice to finally talk to you.
Good, sir. Good. And I've been in contact with some of my contacts in the Jicarilla, mm-hmm. in the Dulce area, and I think their biggest concerns at this point is how you possibly came in contact with the pathogens that have put you in the position that you're in right now.
You know, we've been doing a lot of analysis, JC, and I don't think it happened there. On the Mesa, I don't think it came from touching the containers like we originally believed. My people are telling me that something happened to me I really can't go into it, but we don't believe it happened there at the Mesa. We believe something did happen to me.
In other words, you think you were contaminated?
Yeah, I do.
Well, it's definitely
possible. There was a strange incident that occurred during the day at a location off the reservation that I don't want to name at this time because, one, I don't want to get sued, but something very strange happened at this location whereby we were being served lunch, and I was the only one who was served by this specific individual who, when we went back and did our research, nobody knows who that person was. We think that's what happened to me, that somebody served me something that, you know, a drink. It was a drink. And nobody recalls this person from the establishment. They said, that person, there's nobody here that looks like that works here. Well, my team says, we all really remember because everybody else got served by this really attractive young woman, and I wasn't. I was, you know, served a drink by some middle-aged dude who apparently doesn't work there. So we think that's what happened. It wasn't in Dulce. It was in a neighboring community. It was during the meal that we were having, and I took the family there with us. The family that was hosting us, I took them there with my research team, and that's what we believe happened now that we're analyzing. Because we've been trying to figure this out. What the hell happened to me? And we think we've nailed it. But I'm not going to ding the establishment because I don't want to, you know, one, I don't want to hurt their business. They're good people, and I don't want to get sued. So, but we think we figured it out. Somebody there served me something. And this person doesn't work there. We have gone over it again and again with the establishment. They said that nobody like that works here. So we don't know how they got in, and we don't know how they were able to do that.
Okay, your buddy's still on the line. You got anything else to say?
I'll be praying for you, Anthony, and a lot of people are praying for you. I hope you're doing better. Get stronger.
Thank you.
Be careful.
Okay, thank you, caller. This is Jerry Pippin. We have Anthony Sanchez with us. The name of the book is UFO Highway. Our 888 number is flooded. People trying to get in and they can't. So we have a 970 area code possible, and also an area code 234. And I assume that you use those area codes and you call as a backup, the regular number here, which would be 919-2355. If I'm in error, we'll find out pretty shortly. Anthony, a lot of interest in this. And, when did you first become aware that Dulce would be such a hot button?
You know, I didn't know anything about Dulce prior to meeting with this individual. I really was not that interested in the whole Dulce story because, you know, there was already a lot of information out there with respect to Thomas Costello, Anne West, and even John Lear and all these people regarding this whole reptilian aspect to the story. I had no interest. It wasn't until I met this individual through another contact of mine that an interest was sparked. When he told me what he had done, where he had been, I said, okay, I need to look into this. And that's when I really went headfirst. I delved headfirst into the whole Dulce history and the series of events that he told me about.
A lot of people have written me emails concerned about the safety not only of you, Anthony Sanchez, but others that are whistleblowers. And I've always felt the best way to combat that is to just be public as much as you can. And you and I have talked about this before.
Mm-hmm.
And, a lot of times the messenger is the one that gets whacked. And over the years in broadcasting, I've had people fire shots at me. I've always felt that it's happened a couple of times, both times in Nevada, as a matter of fact. I thought, you know, it was more of a less a warning rather than I'm just incredibly lucky. I think you're more likely to be harmed with something like you're talking about, a bio attack, a biological attack, or just out and out poison. So maybe you need to get one of your buddies to be a taster.
Yeah, Rick, I'm going to get Rick Prestel, my fellow researcher. I'm going to start making him drink everything first and taste everything first.
Right. Every who serves you the drink, say, hey, you drink after me. You drink first.
Yeah, I'll get my buddy Rick to do it. but then who's going to man the high-def camera if Rick goes down?
Yeah, you're right. You can't get rid of your important crew. By the way, speaking of that camera and your work there, are you going to come out with a documentary?
You know, I'm not for certain we're going to do a documentary. What we're probably going to do is release the video of the presentation I did for Janet Saylor at the ASPE Symposium. We're probably going to do that, and here's the reason why. We're conducting an ongoing investigation at the moment, and until we complete this ongoing investigation, we can't even think about a documentary. So what we're probably going to do is, for free, release the symposium presentation that I did. We'll put it on our website and on YouTube for free. We won't charge for that. I mean, I'm sure my publicist is not going to be happy with the announcement I just made, you know, because how the hell are we going to get funding for our work? But, you know, sometimes you just got to look past the dollar signs, unfortunately, like some of these other people who are attacking me, you know, do. Let me point something out. I had a conversation with a good friend of mine today. His name is Kevin Smith. He does a show, too, like you, Jerry. And I told Kevin this. I have no problem with radio hosts, UFO researchers, paranormal investigators asking for donations. Because, hell, we all need money to conduct these investigations. But I have a problem with people who put up websites and just spit out the same information over and over and over as a means to ask for money, 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 money. And one of these individuals attacking me, that's what he does. He's just in the business of spitting out the same old stories just so that he can justify asking for money. And his website is flooded with these ads. Those are the type of people that get on my nerves. I'm not that type of person. Go to my website. We sell a book. You're not going to see any other, you know, links to PayPal or anything anywhere else other than the book. And if you're having financial difficulties, but you want to understand what's going on, let me know. I'll send you the book for free. I've done it in the past, and I'll do it again. So that's the difference between me and these other guys.
Yeah, I just wouldn't let these detractors bother me too much.
Yeah.
A lot of that is professional jealousy, and part of it is they just don't happen to believe what you're writing, and they like to blame the messenger. I mean, I do all kinds of shows, have all kinds of guests talking about all kinds of things and all kinds of hypotheses and all kinds of political beliefs. And believe it or not, a lot of people seem to take me to task instead of the person making the statements. And I kind of feel my job is to let people, as guests, explain why they feel the way they do and bring forth the issues. And you've always been a straightforward guy, as far as I'm concerned, Anthony.
Oh, yeah. You know, the one thing that Jerry, there's just one thing that I would like to point out here. You know, the people that are attacking me over the DD-214, which is the discharge information from the colonel. And it's absolutely ridiculous. This person is taking the DD-214 back to the NPRC, where I got the document from originally, and he expects them to say, "Why, yes, sir, there is an underground facility in Dulce, and this colonel did work there." Absolutely. Do you think that the government is actually going to admit to the existence of a top-secret underground facility, let alone something on sovereign land that has aliens there? That's what this person is basing their whole argument on. And it's just absolutely ridiculous. Not to mention that in the DD-214, they found an anomaly, which is an anachronism of sort. See, because the order, the discharge order didn't come about until some 13 years after the date of the colonel's actual discharge source. My source at the NPRC stated that reissued DD-214s, like the colonel's, are not outside of succumbing to human error at the hands of personnel responsible for them. Over 10 years as a business owner, having requested discharge documents for the state of California and federal contracts, which I can openly admit now, unlike I was able to admit before, I have personally seen typos, hand-type entries, corrections, mistakes, smears, etc. So no, that was not evidence of any type of attempt to conceal or confuse anyone. Anybody can go to Google and Google a DD-214 to see that thousands of examples exist with errors, typos, hand-type entries, corrections, mistakes, smears, etc. So the kernel of DD-214 is pristine. It contains one small clerical anomaly, and it is 100% genuine. That's what compels me. That's the evidence that compels me to believe the events that the kernel tells me about. So those people who are going to take emails that I sent to them, twist them, augment them, fabricate them further to further their premise to discredit me, you know, they're just absolutely doing the worst thing that they could do for UFO researchers around the world.
You know, you mentioned Colonel X. Don't you have a news source? Somebody?
The person that put me in contact with the Colonel is a person that I refer to as Trinity. This is the person that I worked with at Intel Corporation. Yes. He was a technician. Now, this is what's funny about him. He was a technician. Yes, he had a master's degree in computer science. How many technicians do you know with a master's degree in computer science work in a technician corps? Not likely. So that's when I knew something was off about this guy. But this is the guy that got me in contact with the Colonel. This is the guy who was part of a project called Project Leonid. He worked for Lockheed Martin Company. Now, one of the things going around right now is everybody thinks, oh, it's just Lockheed Martin. No. This was Lockheed Martin, Northrop Grumman, Hitachi LTD. There was a bunch of companies all working in tandem on Project Leonid with the Department of Defense, with NASA, with the Air Force. This is a multifaceted weapon system that I'm going to be releasing the information on because of this reason. It has a 30% probability of turning against us, much like the Skynet system in Terminator, the movie Terminator. 30% is just too damn high for me. There have been people that have lost their lives, engineers that have already lost their lives, have disappeared because they were going to go forward with the information about Project Leonid. Well, I'm going full blown public with this information. I'm conducting a meeting this week with an individual, and hopefully together we will set the record straight with regards to Project Leonid.
So. That sounds like you might have that sounds like you may have another book coming out.
I don't know if it's going to be a book. I'm not sure. It may just be on my website. But there is definitely a connection to Dulce, and this is what it is. There is a technology exchange program between the Greys and the military-industrial complex here in the United States. And that technology that's being utilized for Project Limited partially is Grey technology. And what scares me is that Project Leonid is supposed to be used to, prevent incoming ICBMs from the enemy, but also to prevent, defend against incoming alien craft. Well, if the technology is being provided by a faction of these, you know, that were created by these incoming, you know, Anunnaki or progenitors or whatever you want to call them, shouldn't that also be a concern? God, there's so much wrong with this project, and that's why we got to get the information out about Project Leonid.
When we talk about technology angle and the military-industrial complex, I've always thought that a lot of this was kept private because of money. In other words, A, they get a lot of money for developing things and back engineering, and B, if the taxpayers were footing the bill, and they came out with these patents, which they do, and they make money commercially, some lawyer out there ought to take them to court and sue on behalf of the taxpayers and get the profits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you know, we made a major discovery with respect to a company that is doing exactly that. There is a company that is operating under the Technology Commercialization Offices over at LANL, taking great technology to mass-produce micronuclear reactors and sell them to militaries around the world. This company is going to make hundreds of billions of dollars, possibly into the trillions. And the reason why, well, we know the reason why they're doing it. It has a lot to do with what I call the Iraqi paradox. You see, we went into Iraq to essentially depose this dictator and to liberate these people, you know, and instill democracy. And we were, you know, conventional wisdom stated that we were supposed to do what? We were supposed to be repaid in oil riches. We never saw a single drip of oil come out of Iraq that benefited the United States or the Western world or anybody who participated in the coalition. Get this. Who benefited from the Iraq war? The New World Order, the Illuminati corporations such as Halliburton and Blackwater. Every single month, while the American taxpayer and all these other coalition countries dumped billions of U.S. dollars into Iraq to rebuild and reconstruct, who was getting paid? Halliburton was. Blackwater was. All these private security firms. All these companies who did what? Who took those dollars, as the dollar began to plummet, they took the money and they converted it into a commodity. Guess which commodity they converted it into? Gold. Why gold? Why is gold skyrocketed to $1,700 a troy ounce today? Why is it unreachable to the average person? Because it has been mass hoarded. And you know, another interesting piece of evidence to connect the dots here, that one of the largest gold hoards in the world was known to exist where? In Iraq. Owned by whom? Saddam Hussein. We were never there for the oil. Hell, if we wanted oil, and we did want oil, we just had to go over to Libya. In 3 months, we got all the oil we wanted. The Libyan oil fields are way richer than Saudi Arabia, more plentiful than anywhere else in the world, and it only took us 3 months after working with a NATO incursion to get what we needed. Ironically, a kid in the New York Yankees baseball hat holding a 24-karat gold-plated pistol is the one that took out Gaddafi. Well, there were no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. We never were there for the gold. And remember, that's what this is all about. Why gold? Anyone who knows anything about Anunnaki and gray technology and, you know, what is one of the requirements if not gold? So there's a lot of connections here. We're still making these connections, connecting the dots. And yeah, you know, the information's going to be coming out. I'm going to be releasing this information in a few weeks.
Yeah, I'm glad you got into that part of this equation, because a lot of people just scratch their heads and can't understand exactly why the UFO phenomenon is being covered up after all these years. Mm-hmm. And if they read your book, and if they've heard previous interviews, you feel that there's been a presence of the grays, the ETs, for lack of a better thing, word, underground base underneath the mesa that you were standing on a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. They've been there for thousands of years.
Yeah, and originally it wasn't a base. It was just a home. It was a home for these grays who were, you know, essentially deposed there by these progenitors who wanted them to die off because they saw them as a threat. But again, the information that the colonel provided on their whole history based on these gray archaeological tablets that they found, that they brought in Dr. Tahir from Iraq, who was an expert in Akkadian cuneiform, you know, which are now in Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, you know, all that information is in my book. I was able to get that information directly from the colonel's mouth onto paper into the book, and we know exactly why they're there. And we know how we found them. We know why they're working with the military-industrial complex. We know what the connection is now. We know that they're dependent on certain resources. Hence, cattle mutilations and abductions that have taken places, you know, that have taken place over the years. And, you know, now, you know, there's this whole MyLabs aspect to it where the military is utilizing technology from the Greys to conduct their own, you know, abductions and mutilations, you know, for testing, you know, bioagents and whatnot, like ricin and anthrax on cattle. You know, Gabe Valdez said, don't ever touch those damn cattle. If you come near them, there's a reason why. He knew these things were highly contaminated. With what? With ricin, with anthrax, and other types of bioagents. They found gas masks. They found phosphorus materials. The evidence is there. Somebody is there in Dulce. It's the government and it's the Greys. We know this. If you read the Human Origin section of my book, you will understand and you will see the shocking connection, you know, between all of the ancient, cultures and societies around the world that continually do what? They repeat the same old stories over and over that point to the existence of these extraterrestrials that were once around Earth called the Anunnaki.
And okay, so they can pick up your book off your website, order it there, and do you have plans for distribution elsewhere?
At the moment, right now, we're just putting everything to the website, UFOHighway.com.
Okay, so they can order it there, and they can go over there, and you keep that updated quite a lot. You work on that website regularly, and we have a Dulce section on our website now, and I'm sure this is not the last we heard of Dulce. Anthony Sanchez, thanks for being on. We're out of time. I've got to make way for some UFO news before the next show. You got any parting comments?
Yeah, I would just like to thank everybody out there who's come forward to help me during this time, you know, with my illness. And I also want to thank all the people who are supporting the UFO Highway team by purchasing our book and giving us supporting information, evidence, and comments. We value your data as much as we value you purchasing the book. I really want to thank you. So thank all of you.
Anthony Sanchez, we'll be back in touch. Thank you very much. This is Jerry Pippin.